I've been thinking about the little clip I have for the story that we always start out with. It's a completely different energy than the way Suze has brought this meditation forward. And I've been thinking, why is it that maybe I shouldn't use it? But actually, I think it is perfect. I love it when the Dhamma comes together. Because we're going to talk about addiction. And I want to help. I'm trying to think of a way to help us see what addiction is without the accompanying shame and heaviness and craziness about addiction. So the clip I want to play for you is like a building pressure. It starts out kind of soft, and then, you know, I love Dare to Do Motivation. So he's kind of special. And so he talks funny and he builds it up and he's building up this speed and this energy, this time, it's getting bigger and bigger. And that is what addiction does. So right now we're still and quiet, which is the nature of our bodies and minds. It's the place where we can always find our way to. But we don't see the building of addiction. And I think this clip is going to, I think you're going to be able to experience in present moment what it's like when the way addiction builds in our lives, the way habit turns into addiction, turns into suffering and that flow. So let me share the screen.
One day, a psychology professor entered the classroom with half a glass of water in his hand. The students expected the old common question: was it half empty or half full? But to their surprise, he asked them, "How heavy is this glass of water?" The answers given by the students ranged from 7 ounces to 25 ounces. But the professor replied that the actual weight of the glass of water doesn't matter. What matters is how long you hold the glass in your hand. If you hold the glass for a minute, you won't feel much weight. But if you hold it for 10 minutes, you will feel a little more weight. And the more time goes on, the heavier this glass of water will get. So if you hold the glass for an entire day, your hands would go numb from the pain. You would have cramps and feel exhausted, and your only wish would be to drop or lay down that glass of water. But similar is the case when you carry stress with you or pain. If you think about stress or pain for a while and then let it go, then there is no problem. But if you think about all the stress and all the pain in your life for hours and hours, or even an entire day, it starts becoming a problem, and it becomes worse once you fall asleep while still holding onto the pain and the stress. You see, in life, in your life, you should learn to let go of all of your stresses and pains, and never lay down to sleep while still thinking about them. If you can do something about your problems, then just do it. In the other case, just leave it and work towards your goals, or else all the stress and pain will just kill your aim in life. You are in control over your life. You decide what stresses you or what pains you. And the sooner you realize this, the sooner you will start your life with a smile in your face every day. So let go of your problems, let go of your pain, let go of your stress, and start living today. This is Dare to Do Motivation Stories.
I love that guy's voice. This is the way I think addiction is to us. There is a subtlety to it. It's not like habits and patterns. Habits and patterns are, you know, part and parcel of how we, it's part of that whole dependent origination cycle, and we just begin to do these habits. But addiction is a little different, and this month we're going to talk about it, and I'm hoping that we can talk about it in a way that we don't get trapped in the addiction itself, and we stay outside trying to watch and observe what it's doing. It builds. It attaches to us and it becomes part of who we are. And we get stuck in it through its identification, and we begin to sort of live out of it more and more and more and more. And the obsession of it begins to almost control everything about how we are. So this month, we're going to look at addiction, and not just whether or not you're addicted to a substance, or whether or not I'm addicted to food, or whether or not I have an addiction to tobacco, or whatever our addiction is. Computers. I mean, there's so many. I mean, good Lord, if we thought about addictions, you know, we could get stuck in the trap of all the things we're addicted to. Sugar, everything. Coffee in the morning, I don't care. Anything you do, and you've been doing it for the last 10 years, consider that an addiction. It's all addiction, because we are of the nature to get attached. And when we get attached, we get caught in a need for that attachment to always be there. So rather than, because this is Dhamma, this is not self-improvement. We are not interested, just like in the story, where the teacher's not interested in how much water is actually in the glass. Because we're not interested in what our addictions are. Maybe we could use them as examples to help us understand this broader wisdom. We are looking at what is the nature of addiction. What is addiction in this human existence? What is the perception that's controlling that addiction? What is the stress? I mean, what does it do in my life? How does it show up? And ultimately, I love what he said in the story about how the longer you hold the glass of water, the less it matters how much water is in there, and the more it's going to weigh upon you. So in some respects, when we're looking at addiction, it's not so much what the addiction is, but how much weight is it bearing on our lives? How much is it pushing us and pushing us and pushing us to conform to this attachment, this expanded habit? That's what we're looking for, is to begin to see not just the addiction, but what is it doing? The reason why I think it's important to, the way we're going to divide this month up is, we're going to spend some time talking about what we think of as addiction, substance addictions to substances like alcohol or drugs, and recovery and what it's like, and food and all kinds, there's all kinds of addiction. So we're going to talk about that addiction process and ways that we go through to kind of come to terms with it. And, you know, kind of, I think the only word you can really use when it comes to addiction is recover from that habit. But we're also going to talk about how connected addiction is to the second noble truth of wanting. This is the reason why this is important, is because wanting, clinging, grasping, that is the root of our suffering. It's very hard it's hard for me to see this sometimes because I love sugar so much. But it's really not the sugar that's causing me so much trouble. It's the inability to feel the wanting of sugar and not abide by it, not follow it. That is what is killing me around sugar. So if I just say, oh, I'm addicted to sugar, I will beat myself up because I keep eating sugar, and I'm going to keep eating sugar because, you know, I'm addicted to sugar. So it doesn't really matter to the body how much I don't want to eat it. I'm still going to eat it, because until I'm able to come to this understanding around the wanting, then I'm going to keep eating the sugar, which is connected to the second noble truth. But the thing is, what I am most worried about talking about addiction, is that the gift of the Buddha's practice, the gift of why Dhamma has remained a source of refuge for 2,600 years, whereas all these self-help programs that you can see, they kind of come and go. We all have probably tried a little bit of this and we tried that. It was like, oh yeah, this is supposed to be the thing that gets you right, get your life right. And we did it and we paid all that money, and then, you know, that's gone. And then we tried something else, and then that's gone. We tried something else. I mean, we just tried and tried and tried all these different things. But the Dhamma stays exactly as it has been for thousands of years. So why would that be? And I think it points to an important aspect of Dhamma that doesn't show up in self-help programs, which has to do with how we view the self. In a self-help program, the whole point of it is I gotta fix myself. So I'm gonna use this teaching, this principle, this process, this thing that everybody's raving about, this trend, I'm going to use mindfulness to fix me. And it works for a while, but it doesn't have any staying ability. The Dhamma has staying ability because the Buddha said it is a non-self experience. This is not about you. It's not about, are you, Tuareg, addicted to sugar? And, oh, you shouldn't be addicted to sugar. Nobody eats sugar anymore. I mean, it's almost a sin to mention the word sugar nowadays, but I can't help it. So it's like, if I think this is about me, you can see that I'm going to get stuck in forever trying to fix me, hide me, do something about me. But if, as a Sangha, which is why it's important that we are a Sangha, if we think about this as everybody on this call is addicted to a whole bunch of stuff, then what your addiction is no different than this. And, oh, I can talk about sugar. You can talk about alcohol. I can talk about TV. I can talk about food. It doesn't really matter. It's like the water. It doesn't matter how much water it is. What we want to get at is, what we want to begin to see is, how is it pervading into my life to the point where I am feeling a lot of pain and suffering? Because that is what the Dhamma is pointing at. It's pointing at the alleviation of suffering, not the fixing of each of us, because there's nothing to fix. So this month, that's what we're pointing us to, is to look at the wanting. It's okay that we want. This is the other thing about Dhamma that I have learned over the years. It doesn't really matter if you get yourself through that addiction. I mean, some addictions like alcohol or drugs might be so harmful to the overall community, it might hurt you. But the point that I'm trying to make is that even if I get rid of an addiction, even if I completely work on my addiction to television, then sugar's there. I'm like, okay, let's say I figure it all out. I've got the sugar down. I've got the TV down. It won't really matter. I'll start being addicted to something else because I have the mind that is of the nature to get addicted. And that, when you begin to see that this is less about you and more about the nature of mind, the grasping mind, then what Suze's meditation did actually helps us see that there is a place where we can settle. There is a refuge that we can find, that we can ground ourselves in and not be so thrown about by the wanting and the pressure and the mounting, have to, greed. We don't have to get caught in that chaos as much as we get caught in. And even if we're in it, we can pull back. It opens the door for seeing the choice around wanting. And until we see the choice, then the wanting will get us every time. But when we start seeing that we choose whether to renunciate or move into it, that choice, even watching when I renunciate, when I don't, all of it, that's all Dhamma. It's not I am good when I renunciate and bad when I don't. The Buddha never made that good-bad distinction like we do. It's just, this is what happens if I renunciate. This is what happens if I don't. Okay, this is what happens when I don't. I don't. Oh, this is what happens when I do. Oh, this is what happens when I do. Oh, okay, but I don't. Oh, but I did. It's like that. It's just noticing it like that so that we can go through this month not beating ourselves up for what we see, but laughing and enjoying this recognition as a Sangha. Ah, this is what it is to be human. This is what we do. And then sharing, oh, I see this, I see that, I see this, I see that. Because in the long run, you and I both know, it's going to take way longer than a month to work on some of our addictions. We're talking about holding on to that addiction. You've had it for 10 years. You can pretty much bank on at least another 2 of assertive effort trying to stop. So it's something that if you're going to be in it for the long haul, then you have to have a level of humor, uplift, and a sense of, I don't know how you could describe it, but forward leaning, I guess, forward thinking of the possibility that I could live without it. But it's not something that just plucks and it's all over. So this is just the opening into the possibility that you could begin to see some of the choices in your life. Yeah, I think I'll leave it here. Let me just take a moment. Okay, good. How about we get into some groups and kind of check in with each other and see what you think about this? We'll go in for 15 minutes and then I'll call you back. All right. So really, it's just whatever it is that's come up for you as you begin this month talking about addiction. That's really, we just want to see where we're all at. All right. There you go. So would anyone like to share what is open for you for this whole month of kind of talking about addiction? And of course, if you'd like my Dare to Do motivation story, I love him. So wait, we'll see. Yeah, go ahead, Jean.
I did like the story. It was great. Great story. But I'm feeling it. It's sort of discouraged. No. That was our doorbell. Does anyone ever come to our door? No.
I just want to say.
Sometimes we put a meditating sign on the outside of the door because we sit right at the front of the house, but we didn't do that today. So, I lost my train of thought. Oh, it feels sort of discouraging to me. That, you know, I know this is the desire realm, but when you say it's, our nature is to be addicted, that's not so promising, right? So,
well, that's only if you identify it as part of a self. But if you take the self out of it, then what, it's not you. It's not. It's like you don't control what color your hair is. I mean, we can with some kind of chemical, but I mean, you're just born with whatever your hair is. So you're born with a body, a mind that grasps. That's just part of it. I think that's what Buddha was pointing to. That if you get caught in trying to not be addicted, then you're going to get caught in the struggle of it. But if instead the whole point is the journey of a renunciation from addiction, then you can begin to see the gift of what this realm brings. Let me just say it like this. I guess I could say it like this. If you listen to people who are in recovery, the level of joy that they share because they're no longer sunk into the addiction, mm-hmm. It's almost worth the hell for the recovery to be in the space where you know what you know. I hope that makes sense. Meaning that if you, for those of us that have never sort of, well, I don't know. I guess it depends on what you consider an addiction. But the gift of addiction is not having an addiction. It is the process of recovery from it. That is what brings the joy of addiction. So in order to, we're in a realm where awakening is possible because we have enough stuff that we have to work through in order to get to awakening. If we didn't have that, we'd be in the heavenly realms and they're not interested in awakening because it's all good right there. So we don't need to do no stirring of the pot. But in the hell realms where it's so bad, you just can't bring the energy to it. So we're in a realm that something like addiction is a gift if you're willing to go through the journey to renunciate and recover. You see, but if you look at the addiction, you're right. You're going to say, oh my God, this is terrible. But if you look at the recovery process and the joy that comes with it, then it's a gift. Let me see what Amy, I see Amy's hands up.
Okay. So this is Carolyn.
Oh, hi, Carolyn.
Right. So we had a lot in our group that it kind of centered around a theme that actually came up with habits too. And I think it was Arv that said, is it a habit where you're engaged in or you're cutting out? And the whole idea of ignorance, awareness, avoidance, or lack of awareness, avoidance, lack of engagement, that's where, and really going to your thought about the process by which you go to recover, there first has to be this recognition of it being an addiction and being able to, I think Sue's was one, being able to sit with it enough to know, at least to start to know what's going on.
Yes.
So that first step of recognizing it, not just doing it and not even realizing it's an addiction, avoidance, is that necessary? That's what we were thinking was the difficulty with addictions, to start that process that you're talking about.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. So if we get less caught up in I wish I weren't addicted, and more in oh well here's an opportunity to check out what's going on with the mind, then you can see the joy. I mean, I think Buddha at one point admitted, I did not leap for joy. Or he said, my heart did not leap for joy at the thought of renunciation. But he came to have great gratitude for it. And that's what the Dhamma is about, having gratitude for that. Is that Sean or Bruce? Which one of you?
It's Bruce.
Okay,
trying Bruce. To figure out the computer again. If I heard you right, I believe you were saying something like, it's not a matter of stopping the addiction or trying not to be addicted. Did you say it's you want to renunciate instead? What is the difference?
Well, because in the Dhamma, stopping an addiction is like trying to fix myself. But in the Dhamma, what we want to be is closer to the present moment experience. So in every single addictive moment, in every single moment where that addiction arises, what's really happening is the second noble truth, the wanting of something or the wanting of something to not be. So what you're doing is renunciating in that moment and less about whether or not, you know, it's along the same pattern for recovery. It's moment by moment, you're just renunciating in this moment, renunciating in this moment, renunciating in this moment. And that, when you put it in that kind of a framework, it's less about you and more about the practice of renunciation. And what does the practice of renunciation bring you? That's what we're trying to do. We're not trying to fix ourselves here. And as soon as we start talking about addictions, there is this natural tendency to think of all the things I do wrong that I need to fix. And this is more about spending the month beginning to understand what renunciation looks like, what wanting looks like, and kind of, at least this is my take on it. I don't know. Tim might take it a different way.
Does renunciation then possibly open us to the bigger picture?
Yes. And it's in the moment. So renunciation is not something, it's sort of like giving up chocolate for Lent. You know, you're in the moment trying to use that renunciation to see something more than just, I don't like this about myself.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Suze, I saw your hand up. Did you have something?
I just wanted to underscore what I think Carol just said a little bit ago of, I think the step kind of like before renunciation is to just feel the pain of whatever it is that we want that's not there, or whatever that's there that we don't want, to just even that moment of just going, okay, own it. Just yeah. Own it. Because I think it's that skipping over that that makes the whatever the object of addiction so powerful, because I didn't stay with how bad it feels, fill in the blank.
Yeah.
And I just quickly went to the refrigerator or whatever it is, you know. And so I just wanted to underscore that being willing to be with the dukkha, with that feeling of things aren't, I believe things aren't right now, you know, that they should be different, you know, damn it, you know. And I just, when I don't stay there for even if it's only a few moments, that can be an opening that at least then I go, well, I still want that whatever. So I just wanted to underscore.
Yes, I think you're right.
That's just so powerful.
That's why I think your meditation was so important. And I was trying to think to myself, we're going to talk about energy that's completely on the other side of that, but actually it's not. When we practice meditation, what I think we're doing is learning how to be still with the unpleasant. We're learning how to do that. We're practicing being still with the unpleasant so that when that impulse happens and we're making our way to the refrigerator, we are learning to get sensitive to that felt sense of dukkha and increasing the likelihood that we'll be able to stay with the unpleasantness of it. Whether we go to the refrigerator or not is irrelevant, but we're gradually, over time, learning to understand the nature of unpleasant. And then in time, we move a little bit away from it. So I think you're going to hear stories of that process over the course of the month, how people actually moved from one to the other. So that's perfect. Yeah, I'll go ahead, Susan. I see Bruce's hand. It's either Bruce or Shawnee.
I don't know where the hand is, so sorry. Just quickly, I'm reminded of the distortions, like the five distortions, trying to seek
four.
Happiness, where happiness doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, when the pain gets great enough, one might, I'm not saying will, wake up to that truth. And, you know, for me, that's like the beginning of the journey to finally realize, oh my God, you know, this isn't bringing me happiness, you know, and having that pause of being able to even pause and feel And I think it's connected to the heart first, especially with destructive addictions, to feel the heart that's been numbed from any kind of feeling, really, in a caring way. And also the tie to the ignorance is present in those destructive behaviors that keeps us from, it keeps us becoming from the dependent origination and less seeing insight. We can't see. So we're going to talk about how that happens.
Yes. And what's important in what you're saying is that when we see, in common thinking, when you see the gravity of this destructive behavior, common thinking would immediately say, oh my God, this is too much. I can't do it. It's like, I'm just the worst of the worst. That is common thinking, which is why we're in this sangha and you're held in this refuge, which is that when you see this, it is not a sign of, oh my God, this is terrible. It is like, oh, it's like wisdom. It's like, oh, I see that. I can see that. I really want that ice cream. I can feel it. And you still go get the ice cream, but it doesn't matter because there's a sense that when I see it and I feel it, I'm understanding dukkha. And when I'm seeing and feeling dukkha, I'm on my way to this third noble truth. It comes in its own time, but I'm on my way. And so somehow this seeing of our habit is not encased in misery. It's encased in inspiration because it's not you or I. So here we go. Sean, was that you that wanted to?
And just that we only have about a minute. So
Okay, go ahead.
That's okay. Go for it.
I think you just touched on it. Yesterday afternoon, I was just feeling a lot of agitation for different reasons and uncomfortable. And I wanted to feel more comfortable. And so I had a piece of chocolate, the go-to. All right. But I was very aware that that chocolate was only going to give me a very temporary satisfaction. And when I had my last swallow and there was no more chocolate in my mouth, I was going to be where I was before, but I did it anyway. I ate the chocolate.
Yeah.
But at least I was aware when I ate the chocolate.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, I don't think it's wrong to have a piece of chocolate, but it's what's driving me to have the chocolate.
That's right.
And not that that's wrong, but to be aware of it.
Yes, that's right. We do it in stages. And over our lifetime, we learn to liberate the mind. That's exactly what we do. That's what this process is. And the next time, you may or may not go get the chocolate, but it's going to be not out of a, it's bad to go get it. It's just going to be out of wisdom. And that's the point. Is making these choices out of wisdom, not impulse or shame. Okay, Suze, sorry. So
that's okay. That's okay. It's obviously a pretty meaty topic. So we have all month to look at it, which is great. And just a few announcements. The intro class started last Thursday. And people can still join the second session. So if you want to retake the class or if you know anybody, Tim is teaching it. And it's a wonderful way of really understanding what we're doing in this process. Mm-hmm. Something we don't mention very often, but the under 40 group, which is still meeting virtually, and it meets every other Wednesday. So it's on the 14th and the 28th. And you can find this on the calendar. In later this month, there's a day long that Steve Wilhelm and I are leading on finding freedom in impermanence and not self. It's going to be a great way to take our month on addiction and non-identification. And Steve and I have now taught together a couple times, and we're really having a good time doing it. And just a confession, I've, like many of you, struggled with understanding not self. And so we're just going to be sharing how, in our years of practice, how we've come to understand it, and how there are those small moments many times, like Joseph Goldstein said. So, and if you've never done a day long virtually, they're really fun. You do need to pre-register. And then coming up in May, Narayan Liebenson is coming back for a non-residential Living with the Four Noble Truths. And that's the weekend of May 22nd and 23rd. And you should register for that one as well. Just a comment about Donna. Donations that you're able to make to both Seattle Insight and to the teachers is very welcome and appreciated. And I know that folks are, some may be still struggling. We're still in the middle of this pandemic. I say middle because we're really not at the end yet. I don't know where we
are. What? We're not at the end?
No, that's another delusion. So you can go on the SIMS webpage, and it's pretty straightforward how to donate. And just to close, to come back to that kind of settled, relaxed place, even though our minds are churning with all the wisdom that has been shared and all the questions that get raised as we explore these wonderful topics, may we all find safety and happiness, good health and vitality, and may we live with ease. May this be true for all of us in this Sangha and for all beings everywhere. Thank you all for joining today. It's been so rich.